Welcome back to America Weekend. Thanks for listening every Saturday and Sunday. I am Paul Harris. Coming up at the top of the hour, new developments in Syria and the wildfires in Colorado, among the news that we will cover for you at the top of the hour. Education is an ongoing problem in this country. In a lot of school districts, kids are doing just fine. Kids are getting great educations. Great teachers are doing great work with great students. And they're even doing great work with not so great students. A lot of other school districts, however, have been falling behind for a long, long time, losing accreditation. Sometimes it's the fault of the district. Sometimes it's the fault of the policies that have sprung up in the last 10 to 15, 20 years in the world of education reform. John Chubb knows a little bit about this because he's the interim CEO of Education Sector, a nonpartisan policy group. He's going to become the president of the National Association of Independent Schools in a couple of weeks. I've asked him to join me and talk about this today. Welcome to America Weekend, John.
Well, thanks for having me.
One of the things I wanted to start off with was recent efforts on Capitol Hill to revise No Child Left Behind, the education law that was put in place during the Bush years. There have been competing bills, one from Tom Harkin, the Democrat of Iowa, and one from Lamar Alexander, the Republican from Tennessee. Where do we stand in your mind on No Child Left Behind, and what do you think of these proposals?
Well, the No Child Left Behind law has been very controversial. It was the most aggressive effort by Washington to try to promote achievement, particularly among disadvantaged students across the states. The study that we just completed showed that disadvantaged students actually have made pretty good progress the last decade, much more than they did the previous decade. But still, there's a lot of complaining about it being an overreach by Washington and too much regulation, and that probably is accurate. The new bills proposed by Harkin on the Democratic side and Lamar Alexander on the Republican side both try to provide flexibility to the states. The No Child Left Behind did. These are very controversial proposals, and in each case, there's not consensus about what should be done. So I think it's likely that these will be debated, but will not yield signed legislation by the president.
Do you think that the federal government has been overreaching when it comes to education?
Well, the history of Washington's involvement is that the states left to their own devices historically. Did a good job in the case of some states and a really poor job in the case of other states, particularly serving the disadvantaged. So if you go all the way back to the Civil Rights Movement, the Johnson administration, 1965, Washington passed a law to allow the federal government to provide extra funds to the states and the districts to help out in that regard and promote equity. And over time, what Washington found is that some of the states used the money well and other states did not. And for the ones that did not, that required more regulation. And in 2002, actually, the Democrats and President Bush came together and agreed that something pretty tough was necessary, and that was No Child Left Behind. So both parties agreed. The problem is that Washington really can't solve each school or each district's problems from a distance, and that's really the rub. So inevitably, states and districts have to be given the responsibility. The problem that we highlight in our report is that if you provide the flexibility and responsibility, but you have no accountability for how the money is used or whether the kids are benefiting, then that's just bad policy. And the report that we just issued showed just how radically different the progress has been over the last decade by the states. The difference between the top states and the lowest and the least progressing states is just in an 8-year period of time about a year and a half worth of achievement, which is to say that if you go back to 2003, where our study started, and you move to 2011, there are the states at the bottom, their fourth graders are exactly where they were a decade ago. And for the top states, their fourth graders are now achieving at more like a middle fifth grade level. So that's a big difference. And the issue for Washington is that if you're going to provide all of this money and flexibility, how do you ensure that more states are like a Maryland or a Massachusetts or a Kentucky, the ones that have made a lot of progress, and not like a West Virginia or a, you know, an Oregon or a South Dakota, which have made no progress or in some cases have gone backwards.
Have you been able to identify what it is that the states that have made progress are doing right?
Yeah, pretty. I mean, pretty much. And they're, you know, they're pretty straightforward things. So they have high academic standards. In other words, what they're expecting the students to know and be able to do as they work through you know, elementary, middle, and high school. They have high standards. They have good tests. They're not just multiple choice tests. They ask students to you know, to show their work, to write. They have you know, what are called high cut points or high passing scores. You don't get a pass for, you know, for getting 40% right or something. Mm-hmm. So they have high standards. The second thing they do is they have sensible accountability systems. No Child Left Behind sort of branded most schools as failures, even if they had only had a minor stumble. That was obviously crude. The strong states have differentiated measures so that the schools that get an A grade, some of the states give letter grades to their schools, are really exemplary, and only a small number of schools will get an F, and those schools get really close attention. So, you know, I mean, it's thoughtful accountability. And then the last bit is with respect to their teachers and principals, they do a much better job of gauging the work that they're doing and the ones that need help. They provide stronger support. They're pretty logical things, but the states that are really achieving are quite serious about these things, and the other states have been just, you know, there's no other word for it, but lax.
I think lax is an understatement, John.
You know, it is.
Yeah. 45 states and the District of Columbia have adopted the Common Core standards, which essentially say, you know what, everybody in America should know these things. Doesn't matter what state you live in. Here's a list of things that everybody who goes to school should know by the time they graduate high school. I said 45 states. What's wrong with the other 5 states? Why don't they want to have Common Core standards there?
Well, that's a very good question. It doesn't make any sense to me. One of them's Texas, and that's just how Texas is. Another one's Virginia. They somehow see this as a, you know, some sort of a federal plot, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what Nebraska's deal is, but, you know, the truth of the matter is that these standards were very thoughtfully created for most states. They're an upgrade. They represent the views of very thoughtful, top-notch educators and specialists in math and language arts. And it would be a good thing if the states the states have adopted them. That's the first step. Now they have to adopt the assessments and the proficiency standards that go along with it. So there's a long way to go, but this is potentially a really important step forward for the country.
I want to go back to one word that you've used and we hear used quite often, and that is accountability. Those states that are doing well, that you mentioned, and others that are doing well, are really, yep, really doing a good job. How are they being held accountable or holding their own schools accountable?
Well, what the top states do is they thoughtfully evaluate the progress that's being made. And for schools that are, you know, for example, get a C grade, that's not where you want to be, but they go to the schools and they say, basically, look, come up with a credible plan for how you're going to improve this. And they don't come down hard on them, and they continue to work with them to move them forward. The schools that are really bad, your F schools or D schools, they intervene in them in a serious way. I mean, they'll yank principals, they'll relocate teachers, they will close the school down if need be. And so when schools and educators feel like they're being treated fairly, even if it's demanding, then I think you make progress. And that's really what distinguishes them. In the states that aren't making progress, you find schools that are graded F or are, you know, are failing, you know, 5 years in a row, 10 years in a row. And the only thing that happens is that they have to file a new plan. And that really doesn't work.
Or in many cases, the answer is, well, you know what, that's a lost cause. We'll just close that school and we'll try to figure out a way to put those kids somewhere else. It's an ongoing problem, and you can read this report from Education Sector on the website. It's educationsector.org. John Chubb is the interim CEO there and soon to be the president of the National Association of Independent Schools. Thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend. Check us out on Facebook and on Twitter and every Saturday and Sunday on your radio from the Envision Radio Networks. America.